Yeah. Start shooting up your ass, you're gonna go to jail. Watch your cancer, like they use.
Oh, yeah.
Cattle brush.
Oh, that was all then about Valleybill, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, interesting.
That's legal to do what you're doing.
All I.
I know it is.
Yeah. Sheriff showed me the.
That's why I was doing it.
Yeah. Too bad we can't make it a little stronger.
Anyway, here we are.
Let's be on a commissioner.
No, no joke today.
Good, good thing our boss is a chef, we're gonna get to it anyway.
Yes, yes. Holy.
Should've made him wear a mask. Nothing we can do until we know to get back up here.
All right, Richard, you can start the meeting whenever you're ready.
Okay, the joke, come on, we'll find out in a minute.
Joe is sick.
Yeah, Joe is.
He's probably not gonna be here unless.
He will not be.
Calling in.
We'll call the meeting order, this is a regular commission meeting for the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. And, please join me in the.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, up in there, roll call.
Larry.
Here.
Dan.
Here.
Sharon.
Here.
Richard.
Here.
Joe is absent.
Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
We did add, information item G and H, G, discussion of a sea lion policy, and H, board practice assessment date.
Okay.
But you're already added, so.
Well, I just kinda, we added them, it was posted online, but.
Okay.
Just to make sure.
Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
No.
Okay. All right, that brings us to approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda as amended. I'll second.
Okay, have a motion to second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Approval of the meeting minutes, this would be for the regular commission meeting Wednesday, February 21st, 2024.
Motion to approve. Second.
Okay, we have a motion to second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Brings us to public comments, I have one in front of me, Mike Murphy.
Yes, I would like to ask the board if I can respectfully ask the board if I could talk. When item D comes up, it's at the end of, the meeting, I thought it would be more appropriate, but if you'd like me to talk now, I will.
Which item D are you looking at, the information item D on resolution?
Yes, yes, it's that time of year again.
Anybody have any objections to the flag?
None.
Okay.
Thank you, commissioners.
Any others that you're aware of, Danielle?
That was all that I received.
Okay. That moves us then to the management and financial report.
Okay, for the RV park, staff put out an RV, an RFP for asphalt repairs, Tidewater contractors came in with the lowest quote at $9,000. Work will begin when weather permits and weather and time permits. A strong windstorm caused the fences to fall over in multiple spots throughout the park. Before the sections are repaired, I will be getting price quotes, for port staff to install a 4-foot chain link fence for the back row. Our new camp host, has arrived, he will be here for a 6-month period and we are happy to have him as part of our team. Marina Sea Lions, have returned to JDOC. Some vessels have been temporarily relocated until they have moved on. No major damage has been reported at this time. That is slowly changing. Strong winds and heavy surge caused some ropes to break and cleats to rip out in both basins. All the repairs are completed. Port received notice that we have been awarded the Golden Acre Award. This is an award is for hard work, devotion, and exceptional compliance in the Clean Marina program with OSMB. We plan to have Glenn Dolphin with OSMB to be at our May 15th meeting to present the award. Boat launches were up. Daily trailer storage still down, but there was more launches in February. Equipment services, telehandler 2, haulouts 1. Commercial receiving docks, all hoists are operational. We are continuing to add more gussets on the new Pacific Seafood dock where the fender pilings are. And requests for third quarter landing totals will be March 31st. Commercial retail building, new pumps are on order for the retail septic system. They actually came in today. Gutters were checked and cleaned in the retail area. Work continues at Augustino Winery. They hope to have opening night around May 1st. Lease renewal letters were sent to Oregon Life Homes and Founders Crab Shack. And those lease renewal letters are sent out 90 days in advance. Those leases are still 90 days out. 92 work orders were completed for the month of February. Office staff did 38 mortgage renewals, invoicing, daily checks of port grounds and safety issues, rate and budget preparation, turbidity monitoring and testing, review and submitted corrections from the OCBA biennial report for ports. Any questions? The FEMA and the wastewater treatment plant, those updates will be discussed under information items.
So we have a new park host.
Yep.
We have two now.
We have two now. Yeah, splits their days up, each one of them. They'll be on for 3 days, off for 3 days, on for 3 days. So nobody's stuck on weekends. It's just kind of an all constant alternating situation for them.
Two questions, Travis.
Yeah.
If Richard is done, first one is OCBA. What is that?
Oregon Coast Visitors Association.
Okay. And you say in the commercial receiving docks, you have two listed for Pacific Seafood, the new one, which I'm assuming is the gussets for the pilings out in front of the processing plant.
Yep.
Where's the other one that's operational for Pacific
Seafood? The lower dock.
Where the old fuel dock ice house used to sit. Years ago.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Bring us to safety, security, and environmental report.
Port maintenance discussed hard hat safety. We had 4 incidences for the month of February. We had someone doing donuts in the RV park. We had some gear storage stolen, which we've been in contact with the Curry County Sheriff with. And then there was some damage to the fishing vessel Kathleen, which we've been in contact with Curry County Sheriff regarding. 4 ACEs in the port came across 20 security issues for the month of February, mainly overnight parking. Monthly inspections were completed for our stormwater pollution control plan, and we did do our 2 of 4 required tests for our DEC plus stormwater.
Hello there. The vessel Kathleen, were the harbor cameras able to assist the police department on this?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Bring us to the financial side.
Okay, for month ending February 2024, our unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $673,728, with our restricted cash and equivalents totaling $320,140. Our total checking and savings is at $993,868. Our total revenue for all funds was $327,481. Excuse me for the stumble there. Our expenses for all funds was $216,848, leaving our net income at $110,633. Total income for all funds is at 35.8%, with general fund program revenues at 61.5%. Total expenditures for all funds is at 28.2%, with general fund expenditures at 58.1%. I did send out an RFP back in January for a new auditor to 198 potentials, and I have received two proposals, which are included in today's packet for a decision. Our current auditor for fiscal year 22-23 had asked for an extension back in December, which was approved. I've been in contact with her and our financial advisor. They're not going to meet the March 31st deadline either, so they've asked for a second extension, another 90 days, which would take us to June 30th. Since I typed this up, that extension was approved, so hopefully we'll get that done in time.
So, under the balance sheet, is the total checking and savings the sum of the two figures above it, or is that a separate amount of money?
That's the total of those two.
Okay. Just making sure I
understand.
Sure,
yep.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Entertain a motion to accept the management financial report.
Motion to approve the managers and financial report as submitted.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that moves us to action item, beginning with resolution 2024-03, reestablishing the reserve fund policy.
Okay, so in our February 21st meeting, the board had a chance to review this policy. The same information is here. Again, this is us divvying up our reserve fund to include general reserve, capital reserve, dredging reserve, and landing fee reserves. This will just help us better state what that money is being saved for. This policy will go into effect with our new rates going into effect July 1st, and you will also see these fund totals and everything that we're laying out in our budget that we'll be talking about too. And so we'll see exactly how much money is into it, and we broke out the budget so each one of them have their own page so we can see what's actually going into each one. It's not just falling under our reserve fund. You'll be able to see what's going in and out of it.
Any questions or comments? Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Go ahead.
Motion to approve resolution number 2024-03, reestablishing reserve fund policy for it to take effect this year, 2024-2025.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Karen?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to action item B.
Okay, auditor proposals. So we did, as April said, we put out our RFP. We received one back that was on time. The second candidate, the KDP, Certified Public Accountant, they got us to theirs late. Apparently they lost it in an email. We told them we had accepted still due to the lack of funds that we had. Both of them have really good proposals. The biggest thing that stands out to me is the price. And the first proposal, where did it come in at? Now I lost it. $22,800 for next year's audit. Now, they also have given us pricing for the next three fiscal years. with an assumed 4% inflation adjustment each year. So they do give us the ability that we can continue with the same firm, you know, and not have to go through what we're going through right now. Auditors are very difficult for us to find. KDP, they are a bigger outfit. Both of them have good recommendations. The KDP one did come in at $43,000 for this year. So, in my opinion, going through and looking and reading through both of them, I do like the way our first one, audit proposal looks like. The price is much more fitting to what we can afford. So
does that price include the FEMA audit, or is that separate?
No, this included the one single audit as well.
The KDP said there may be additional charges for the single audit, but this one was included for Umpqua Valley.
And this Umpqua Valley is not a one person. I mean, it's a group.
I think they have 13 or 14 people on their staff. They did put in the other clients that they have. A lot of them are cities and counties. Yeah, they have a total of 16 staff members in this one. And then current audit clients, school districts, cities. I don't know, there's got to be 30, 40 list of cities and school districts there.
So to put that figure in perspective, what are we doing now for the
Sunsman? At the off the top of my head, the 22-23 audit that we signed off with Connie Huntsman was around, I think, 18,000.
So for an additional 4,000 plus, we're getting a staff of several.
A firm instead of a single.
People on something that can do the EP audit. Okay. Further?
Umpqua Valley, are they the ones that had the 4% every year increase?
Yes.
And is that like a mandatory they're going to get 4% every year? Is that
it has an asterisk next to it. Says assumed 4% flat inflation for each year. So I would assume we're going to pay 4%.
But not above 4.
Not the way it's written.
And you've been talking with them.
So I had a lengthy conversation with the president of their firm back in February, right after I sent the request for proposals out. We went through all of our funds, our FEMA projects, everything we do, what we've done. It was a lengthy and thorough conversation. The call I got from KDP was about a 10-minute conversation. She let me know that she received our proposal, was lost in their email somewhere, and she was hoping to put in a bid that we would accept late. The other thing about KDP that we didn't put in here was that she mentioned that their fall schedule is pretty full, so they may already be planning for us to ask for an extension and not be able to get it done by December 31st.
Okay. I know that KDP, because of the other table that I set on, they are fairly efficient and fairly quick. They are catching up Harbor Water that we've been doing for a number of years. And they claim that they will have us 4 audits done this year, which will bring us current by the end of the year. Well, they are pretty well organized, but they are costly.
She mentioned this group charging a one-time fee. However, you know, that's not going to complete the job. I was wondering what they're going to try to go after on the other fees that are, or the other times that they finish the job.
And that was the potential extension was included in that $43,000 quote, if that's what you mean.
yeah, then after that, is that enough? I mean, is it going to one-time deal, or is it going to take them two or three times?
She just said that it may take until March 31st, which is past the deadline.
Well, the red flag was the one time.
I think you're talking about the previous, or current auditor, which is Connie Huntsman, is doing the extension.
They looked at what we had and what we were asking to do. They were looking at their schedule, and they already forewarned us that coming right out of the gate for our next audit, we will probably need to already file for an extension. They also said that after that, they hoped that everything would get caught up and we wouldn't be in that situation. But it was more of a forewarning to us that this is where they at, and it's actually kind of encouraging to see somebody that can plan that far out and actually know what they can and can't get done. There's a lot of different variables that come into it. I'm sure Connie wasn't expecting to have to file for another extension, but you know, when it comes to that, those are the types of things that are just out of our hands. Yeah, well, money does pay, but money is limited at what we can do and reasonably afford.
What does the auditor charge us when they file for an extension? Are there any additional fees to us from the auditor?
We don't know. We just filed through the state of Oregon, and then they send over an approval, or they were a little less thrilled to see we were asking for another extension, but and they did state that they'd be watching it much closer next year. So,
but the reality is we're pretty much powerless. I mean, it's not up to us.
Right.
So by taking a step to hire a larger firm, I think we can at least assert our best intentions to try and meet our audit schedule, and hopefully that will occur. Okay.
Is there a benefit to Umpqua Valley 1 year or Umpqua Valley 3 year?
The benefit would be is the difficulty we found even finding one is locking somebody in for 3 years, and over those 3 years kind of paying a little closer attention to what availability might be, and before it kind of gets as close as we waited this year, you know, get the ball rolling earlier, maybe, you know, after our second audit, get the ball rolling for the future years and not be kind of like behind the curve, I guess, right as we are right now.
Well, I think it would be beneficial also for them to have the experience of 1 year rolling forward, because it's going to take them a while to figure us out. I'm sure every little government entity operates a little bit differently, and our funding sources come from different places. So I'm assuming that once they've done it and get familiar with us, then it would be more streamlined second, third year.
Well, and they, in their proposal, they're going to come to the port, they're going to sit down with us, they're going to figure out what our spending policies are, what our practices are, how we do things internally, and, you know, what do they call it, the checks and balances, basically, for fraud or anything like that, and then they'll come back and give us a report on how they interpret how we've done it, or corrective things that we might need to try and look at to do. So they are going to be out here, you know, sitting with us, going through a lot of stuff. They're going to probably come to a board meeting as well. They seem to be engaged with coming out and making sure that they're discussing things with us personally.
In their proposal, they have a list of different people who we would be in contact with and who we would be working with through each step of the process. So.
We'll still need a financial advisor beyond these people as well.
Umpqua Valley says in their proposal that they will prepare our financial statements, which is what our financial consultant does now.
For that price?
Mm-hmm.
Which would save us how much?
$7,000 is what our contract for our financial consultant is right now.
That's the retainer.
And
then we get changed. We get charged $100 per hour.
If we go with them, the net effect will be we'll spend less money in the long run.
Right.
The two.
And all of our communications will be within one office as opposed to two different people in two different places.
That sounds entirely too efficient for government. I'm not sure we can do that. Okay. Anybody care to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept Umpqua Valley Financial Municipal Auditing Service proposal for a three-year contract for fiscal year 2023-24, 2024-25, and 2025-26 services.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item C, donation of docks from Port Gold.
Okay, so Walter, the new port manager for, because he's not new, he's been there a little bit, came and approached us about needing some new, they were looking to rebuild about 10 fingers at their port, and they were looking at what different options were, so he came down and looked at what our docks, the leftover remaining docks that we had when we took apart E-Dock over here. Pete Billiter, who's their contractor, also came and looked at them. They seem to think they'll work. 10 fingers, that's 20 docks. I would recommend donating them a couple extra so they have something to rebuild. The docks that I'm proposing to look at them are the ones that are already stripped and don't have any wood or cleats on it. This will be a good cooperation to contribute to other small ports in Oregon. This is a good opportunity to cost share the removal of these docks from our port to provide Gold Beach with usable docks. So I mean, the cost to get rid of these, we're already trying to get rid of some that are in the boatyard, and they're expensive to get rid of. So since we're not using them, the lifespan of these docks are currently, you know, halfway through. So if another port can use them, I say we let them use them, let them be put to use and being stacked up in our boatyard.
Well, if they're going to come get them and haul them, that's yep. One less thing we have to worry about. Plus, it helps us clean up over there. So it seems like, to me, it seems like a good plan. I'd rather give them the ones with the sea lion on them, but
hey, easy.
That's the only facetious thing I'm going to say all day about sea lions. I mean it.
Yeah.
Is there anything we can use from Gold Beach in exchange?
I like it when they owe us. I don't know yet, but I'm sure there'll come a day that, you know, it'll come back around.
I think it's a good idea. It saves us money getting rid of them, breaking them down and hauling even the concrete and all that off.
Perfect.
Yeah, good job.
Okay. I'll make a motion. Motion to approve donating the Port of Brookings Harbor old concrete floating docks at the discretion of the port manager to the Port of Gold Beach.
Like I said, that number is going to come in at probably 22, maybe 24. Depends on if they want one or two extra docks rebuilt for replacements. So that's the number that's going to be at 22 or 24.
Available that we're not
going to
be using them.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem
with that. Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to action item D, the El Cazadores property sale.
Okay, we are finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel on this one. We have our property line adjustment completed and approved by the county. Business Oregon's approval of the partial reconveyance of that land. This is to approve an authorized signer for all the necessary documents for the closing of that property sale.
Okay. Questions,
comments? Can that be you?
I think it can. The board just needs to decide who wants to be the authorized signer for it.
Okay.
I got to get them that, and then the Danielle's going to type her little heart out tomorrow and get all the meeting minutes done so I can get it to them by the end of, at least the draft of them by the end of the week.
Okay. Do you have any other suggestions other than Travis?
No.
Okay.
No, I think those, anytime that we've got to come up with a designated center, I think it makes a lot more sense to have Travis do it than one of us.
I do too.
Just for continuity in the process. I mean, we step in, sign something, we aren't even sure what we're signing exactly, they would, so.
Right, and they're available.
Yeah.
More available.
They're available. Okay, motion.
Voting for, sir.
Motion to approve Travis as the authorized signer for all necessary documents for closing the property sale. Cindy and Javier.
Almeida.
Almeida.
Second.
Pretty close.
Okay, we have motion second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
Yeah. Okay, information items. Information item A, FEMA Public Works -189 dredging update.
Okay, so for the end of this season, the total clamshell, the clamshell dredging removed 2,438 cubic yards. The dredge from drag flow arrived at the port on February 16th. Assembly of the dredge and training from drag flow representative started on February 19th. Total estimated removed with that is 200 yards. Might be a little bit less than that, but we're getting the survey completed right now. So a total dredged of 2,264 cubic yards. The total remaining under FEMA project is 35,356 cubic yards. The current dredging expenses and budget remaining, total expended so far is $907,062.99, with a remaining budget of $1,540,008. Yeah, so we're still sitting okay, funding-wise.
So that $1,500,000 will go a long way, because there's no equipment in that. That's mainly just port staff.
Yeah, there shouldn't be much more for equipment. Like I said, we're still going to build that FEMA pole barn for that to sit in. Most of the expense that I see it coming up from will be labor and haul off of the material.
And of course, maintenance on the dredge and parts.
Maintenance, needed maintenance. There will be, you know, time in the off season like now with breaking it down, getting it into a shed that we'll be painting. I'm expecting probably at the end of next year, maybe the following year, we'll probably have to rebuild that pump, which we have. It, through the purchase, we purchased a whole box of spare parts and rebuild kits. So we have it on hand, but that's just going to kind of determine on how everything hangs in there. So far, so good, but I'm estimating end of next year, probably maybe the following year, we might get lucky and not have to do any pump rebuilds until then.
Well, what's your impression of it so far? A little bit you've been able to use it?
For this project, it's small. Like, it's small. We're going to be working our tails off to get this through this done. For after this project, for going around and doing maintenance dredges, getting into slips, doing isolated small spots, I think it's great. It's going to work out really good for us in the future doing maintenance dredging. But, you know, with having this amount to get out in a specified amount of time, we're pushing it. But there might even be a chance that we have to ask for an extension after that, but we're going to have to get a couple years under our belt. See exactly how things are going once we get a full season in and determine it after that. So going with a bigger dredge, I think it would have been the exact opposite. We would have got through this faster, but then found that it might not be as useful getting in and around slips as we might hope. So overall, I think it's still a good choice. We're just going to be working this one relatively hard.
What's the debris that's down there?
You know, the debris and the things that happened down there when the state bought their dredge and I ran it there in Bandon and Gold Beach and here, we're encountering the same issues that did.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to plug up an impeller. It doesn't take much for rocks or debris to be covering the end. So there is 10, 15%, maybe even some days 20% of your time is lifting the pump up and getting the sticks, fishing line. I mean, we found a radio already, VHF tapes. I mean, you name it, it's down there, and, you know, it's part of dredging. You know, it's just part of the game.
Well, you haven't found any shopping carts yet, but you probably will.
In the tsunami, I'm hoping when they came through and did that, we found most of the shopping carts and bicycles. So that was what we did 10 years ago, and that was shopping carts, a lot of shopping carts, bicycles, and salmon wire. So hopefully we don't run into too much of that, because that tends to be a pain.
Yeah. Well, this dredge won't, has it got a screen across the intake?
Yeah.
So the trolling wire, excuse me, and such items won't actually get into the impeller. It'll be held up against that screen, won't be able to be sucked up in.
Unless
it being a
string. A string goes up in it, which, you know, when it sits there and it's sucked up against it, is all it's doing is trying to find a way up. And same thing with the sticks. You know, it's a 1-inch hole that's in there, but if it's a 1-inch stick that's 3 inches long and goes through there, it'll plug the impeller. So part of the game, you know, the other dredge that we had, that we used, it was a 10-inch pipe. It was quite a bit bigger. Same thing. I mean, a piece of wood smaller in your hand would plug up the whole thing. So, you know, not a whole lot of dredges are meant to be dredging kind of some of the wonders that come from the bottom of a port.
There you go.
So we got a 1-inch hole in front of our screen.
1-inch holes.
Yeah, by saying they're 1-inch in size.
Yeah.
So it will suck up small rocks, but we get a bigger rock, an inch and a half across, it's going to get sucked up and held on the screen.
Gets sucked up, held against the screen. It does suck it hard enough that it gets stuck up in the holes, and you got to pry them all out and try and catch them all so you're not doing the same thing again. But
so you're going to have somebody pretty much run that thing all day long while it's working, right?
Yep. All day long, hopefully 6 days a week for as many hours as we possibly can. As soon as that it'll allow. I mean, if the end of that pipe isn't black, then we're not dredging. So we just got to keep that thing going as much as possible. Because there will be times when it breaks down, things happen. So any possible time and day that we can be out there, we're going to be doing it.
Is there any way to tell, Travis, when we're dredging that we have blockage on the pump?
Yeah, it's all, well, with this one, it's all by amps. You know, when amps go up, it's moving material. When they drop out, something's plugging the bottom of it. Yeah, you can tell just all by the numbers and what it's
doing. You're saying, so we don't have to have someone standing by the outfall pipe and looking to make sure that we're getting the nasty black-looking water. We don't have to have
You don't have to. You can, down there on the dock, one person knows as soon as you hit it, and you can tell.
Okay. This is information item B, the EPA time extension.
Okay, so we had a conversation with DEQ about our permit. The permit process is taking longer than expected. Not knowing what the entire parameters of the permit are going to be, we have elected to file for another time extension. DEQ said that you know, we turned in our permit application in October of last year. 6 months went by and they approved the application. They said it could take up to another 60 days for it to get handed off to a permit writer, and then another 4 to 6 months for a permit writer actually to write the permit. So they said for us not to expect a permit from them until end of 2024. So with that being said, and not knowing, we can't move on to phase two construction drawings, you know, anything like that until we know that the permit language and the plant that we have coincide together. So we filed for another extension through June of 2025. EPA said as long as we are up to date with our submissions of time extensions, and as long as Congress doesn't come through and pull all funding from all their projects, that we're not in jeopardy of losing this money. Talking with Pacific Seafood, they are also still going through multiple permitting issues with individual permits. I don't know if individual permits and our nationwide permit are stalling this with DEQ. There's conversations in what we're doing because of all the conversations that are going on with discharge permits right now. So best answer that I have right now is they said that wait until you get your DEQ permit so we're not backtracking on more work later.
The only concern I have a lot of concerns about that, but primarily we're losing 5 to 7% of the value of that appropriation every year or more. So we've been kicking this can down the road for several years now, so we're probably already in 15 to 20% less buying ability, spending ability than we have when we appropriated to. Can't keep that up forever.
Nope. No, we cannot. And the environmental and historic review that also has to be done for that area. It's under review by the EPA right now. It still could take up to 6 months for that to be completed. Same thing with our hazard mitigation. It's kind of going off topic from here, but from the FEMA side, for them to do one, they said that our hazard mitigation environmental and historic review could take 18 months to 2 years. So on all these projects, the governmental time that they take to process these applications and go through the reviews is lengthy. A lot longer than I think anybody really anticipated them being.
Nothing we can do about it, but it's pretty frustrating. And I'm pretty sure you couldn't write a proposal that had 20% bump in what you were asking for and call it government. Information item C, DEQ 1200D stormwater test results.
Okay. So the port conducted its second out of our 4 yearly stormwater tests. Samples were taken in the early morning. All samples had to be taken 12 hours after discharge, within 12 hours of the discharge that occurs. Test results show that only one place failed. It was in the boatyard for copper and suspended solids. The boatyard outfall is already under Tier 2 status for copper. Corrective action report has already been completed and sent to an engineer to correct the benchmark exceedance by installing an oil water separator. October 18th, board approved for state and local fiscal recovery funds to be spent purchasing an oil water separator for the boatyard that is in the boatyard. The oil water separator will be installed by before the end of this year. I'll say that. We just put out an RFP today to get quotes for a contractor to install that. So.
Where is this outfall located in the boatyard? It's not the main one beside the travel lift.
No, there's one that goes underneath the travel lift ramp. There's a catch basin and there's one that goes under. So we will be eliminating the current one and moving it 15 feet over and replacing that outfall with a new one. Instead of, 16-inch pipe that's going down there, it'll get reduced to an 8-inch pipe.
That pipe can be big enough to handle the outflow?
Our engineering report says it will be, so.
So you know, Travis, that pipe that comes out by the travel lift, I see there's lots of water that comes from underneath that pipe.
Yep. I have notified the county 3 different times already this year, telling them at some point you guys might want to come out and try fixing it before it gets worse, and they said they will look into it. So the last 12, 15 feet of that pipe is just rotted out at the bottom. So
yeah, That's what I figured.
Well, that has consequences, so if that keeps that up, then we'll clap that whole thing in, and then we got issues. Plus, we have to dredge all the stuff that comes out from underneath that at some point as well.
Yep, I am in contact with them. They have an easement for 30, you know, 15, a total of 30 feet.
I'm saying if it does collapse and fall in, ultimately that'll be their responsibility, not ours.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Except, you have to live with it until it gets dealt with.
Yeah, but that's gonna cause a problem, because you're not gonna be able to get to the boat lift.
Well, depends how far it fails and how much goes in, but nonetheless, you're gonna end up having cones out there and hazard that you can't deal with, so it's not inconsequential, for sure.
I have told the county, and they are aware of the situation.
Have we sent them a letter in writing? No?
Nope.
Okay, that brings us to information item D, draft resolution 2024-XX, court rates for fiscal year 2024-2025.
Okay. Do you have a public comment you want to say right now?
Yeah, I do. Thank you very much, Travis. Commissioners, just every time this time of year, you've heard me say, busy dying is better than a lazy quarter when it comes to fees and that you're going to charge recreational fishermen every year. Just blazing the top of the surface, I went back a few years, got less Roy Davis back there in 2021. Within 6 months' time, the court recreational boats were picking up a whopping $38,000 every 6 months. And then 22, after his departing, the recreational slips picked up a quite significantly lower number of $28,000 a year. Now, keep in mind that these years, the only time there was not the CPI 4.5 plus 2% for dredging fee on top of that was when Roy was still alive, and it was a COVID year, and so he tweaked it a little bit to 1.7, better than 2, but yet not very efficient. And that was a COVID year, and we still had a whopping year for that. So, and then 2023 came around, and the port picked up in the recreational fishing $24,000. So what we're seeing is a graph within the last 4 years started from the top going down instead of from the bottom going up. Now this is where the reflection of a busy dime is better than a lazy quarter. Somehow, if we, you know, and then on top of this, although 2024, we picked up $25,000 in revenue. So it's gone from 2020, it's done nothing, it's gone downhill, and I'm a strong believer it's from the CPI 4.5 plus 2% you're adding to that. And what you're doing with the demographics of Harbor and Brookings is you're playing out a lot of people that have boats. And these boats are going to be seen sitting in their driveways instead of in the slips. So we have a slow bleed here, and with these projects you got up with the dredging and wastewater treatment plant, it's gobbling a lot of money from the harbor. I would like to see, Travis, I know it's clean, you charge yearly, 6 months, 1 month. I would like to see some kind of marketing where you're going to give the faithful that, including myself, that rent a slip yearly, give them some kind of option or incentive to keep their boat in year after year after year. And that, you know, if that comes to, I'm just spitballing, but if it comes to marketing where we'll save that same rate you're paying now for 3 years, and after 3 years it'll be adjusted. You've got 3 years of payment in the bank. something needs to be different than what's going on now. Proof is in the pudding. You got a slow bleed here, and I just thought I'd bring it to the commissioners and Travis that it's time to turn this thing around. Thanks.
There's your turnaround.
What's that?
Salmon season.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, you know, we've had salmon season.
No, we haven't.
No, 2020, 2021, too.
I'm going to argue. I'm going to tell you, I've been doing this a long time, Mike. And over the last, since 2018, we have seen a steady decline in our salmon opportunity in this port and other ports in Oregon. And the people that I've talked to that I know who are both here are saying, listen, if you're going to have a salmon season, I'm going to warm my boat. It makes it worth my while to do that. But I'm not going to warm my boat to go rock fishing.
Yeah, well, what's the percentage on that? You've been doing it for a long time, Richard. I mean, weather comes into play, fishing, salmon season comes into play. You can think of 100 reasons, but bottom line is you keep hiking the rates for recreational fishermen.
Cost of living, right?
No, that's...
Well, that's, we're not going to argue about it, so let's move on.
Yes. We were also very impacted by all the fires, not only with the mortgage, but also in the RV park as well last year.
Let's actually talk about this.
All right, so is what you have here is the same rate sheet, same thing we always do. There in the left in the white is our current rate. In the gray is a 5% increase across the board for every item on here. In blue is our staff recommendations. Some vary a little. There might be no change attached to some of these. I guess we can go through kind of page by page if you want and stop at any discussions that we have. So our service rates, those were all rounded down to the nearest dollar. No change for boat trailer storage. Boat and trailer storage, yeah. Gear storage going up 1 cent per square foot. No change for any disposals, port labor, or permit to sell fish from a boat. Page two, boatyard, 5% increase. Most of those were all rounded down. Mm-hmm. Yep, we rounded all those down to the nearest dollar. No change, though, for yard days. The per day or the monthly rate will stay at $1.50 per foot per day and 75 cents per foot per day for a monthly rate. Mm-hmm. And outrigger pole storage up one, no change. Sorry, no change for that either. Sport, the mortgage rates. So what I did here is 5% increase across the board. I put no change for our annual, our current annual charter boats that moor here or ones that come in here and launch from the launch ramp. Those will stay at 200 and 300. No change to our launch fee. No change to our annual boat launch passes. Is what we did change, and that probably the most significant thing on here, is that as we know, the commercial and recreational rates are different. The commercial rates are at a lesser rate. So is what I proposed on here was that the commercial daily, weekly, monthly, and semi-annual will be the same as the sport rates. I did not, I just went 5% increase on the annual commercial mortgage. So that's is left with the standard increases that it still is a significant rate increase from sport to commercial. Sport for annual would be at $56.62 a foot, and annual commercial is $47.59. So.
So on the daily launch fee, we're capped at $5, right?
For the most part, yes. You can go to Oregon State Marine Board, explain to them why you might want to raise it, but historically, I don't think we've ever done that, and I don't think there's any other ports that are above $7 to launch their boat. Some ports do parking fees on top of that to park in the boat launch parking lot. When you pay for your launch fee, it's not for you to park. It is for you to specifically launch your boat.
And I'm not proposing to change that. I just want to make sure that I understand that we're pretty much capped.
We're pretty much locked into that, yes.
Back to charter boats for a minute, Travis. You have the per boat without moorage agreement launch fee. We're only changing, you're not changing for $15. Why not? Why not?
Because I want to get another year here under our belt. It wasn't a very successful rollout last year. This year, we're going to have to dedicate some more employees to be down there engaging with the charter owners of the vessels when they launch. How many came in and paid? Three?
Four.
Four
three,
last year out of all them that were out there. They are not very inclined to come and do it. So I'm going to give this another year without raising that rate and see if we can get a year under our belt with at that rate.
Do we have any kind of penalty built into our plans?
We don't need one.
They can either pay it. Their options this year will be either they can pay it or they are not welcome to come back and launch their boat as a charter boat here. And if they want to persist it farther than that, then they will be trespassed.
Well, and we can quickly send a complaint to the Marine Board,
yes.
And that will go against their ethics violation, so they could lose their license for that or have it suspended.
It's going to require, it's going to be, people are going to be mad, they're going to be upset,
oh, yeah.
They're going to come screaming and yelling about it, but the enforcement will definitely pick up a lot more this year.
Well, I'm already sitting through that March meeting, I've already had several guys tell me their six-pack operations are moving up here. So several of them have already come to Gold Beach, and they want to come here to fish. So it's in everybody, including the locals, best interest to have that enforced and charged. I don't know whether that $200 will stop somebody from California coming in here or not, but it may be something that will trip them up. They certainly aren't going to do that for a 3 or 4 day fishery, I don't think. Well, we need to. We're experiencing effort shift big time on salmon right now.
So they will be boats that come in on trailers that aren't moored here. It's $300. If they're moored here, each one of our boats, charter boats that are here, they all pay an additional $200 on their moorage fees when they renew. So those will be things that we are going to try and enforce a little better at this year.
I did ask the Oregon State Police to spend some emphasis time here in September during the historic fishery to kind of get a handle on that. That thing's completely out of control from my perspective, and they need to get up here and get after it. And this would be one of the issues, too, for unlicensed guys.
Yeah.
So,
any other questions on this page? For fuel, raising our rate plus, over per gallon would be up 2 cents to 39. Premium non-ethanol gas will go to $1.26, and fueling over the dock to stay at 10 cents a gallon. Fueling over the dock when they get trucks, we are most definitely one of the higher rates that there is. Okay. RV park. this is 5% and either round it up or down to the closest from 50 cents. So if it was 75 cents, it was rounded up. If it was 40 cents, it was rounded down, just to make even dollar amounts for the RV park. And then changing, adding $2 to the non-refundable transaction fee from $8 to $10. Okay. Commercial retail leasing prices. A and B, we had warehouse shop and then a warehouse storage per square foot. We had those as separate line items. I merged the shop and storage together and created just one rate for those. Distinguishing the difference between shop and storage and how the storage that we've seen quickly turns into more of a shop space than a storage space, that we go with the higher rate, and any warehouse, shop, or storage, it can be used for either one, would go from 58 cents to 61 cents per square foot. And then the only other one that didn't go up by 5% is our retail center per square foot, which is all of our buildings that we have here, because in our leases, they're already built in that those raise by the CPI increase. The CPI increase was 3.4. So if we continue with that trend where our rates are higher than what our increase are higher than what the CPI is, new customers will be paying more than what our existing customers are, and when our existing customers renew for a new lease, their price is going to dramatically shoot up because of that rate increase. So keeping our retail center square footage going up at the same rate as the CPI keeps our leases and everybody more in line and at the same prices than varying prices. That makes sense.
So we're taking everything across the board, generally speaking, a 5% increase, but yet the CPI only went up 3.4% or 3.8%?
3.4.
So we're going to raise the CPI or our over and above the CPI?
Yes. Next page, administration fees. So we kind of slashed some of these rates that we don't use, copies of sound recordings, copies of non-standard documents. They were always kind of a different price. We just kept our copies for black and white, 8x11, would be at 26 cents per page. We also got rid of fax, emails per page, local, long distance, and incoming calls. Which just don't apply anymore. So we did remove some of these, and they're listed here in red. Events on port property, Saturday market per vendor going from 12 to, we're recommending 15. The 5% increase moves it to 1260. Our Saturday market per vendor rate, even at $15, is extremely cheap for them to be here. Other ports, Newport, you know, they charge almost $70 per vendor. So, and instead of jumping that up dramatically, I just said $15 even. So that was our staff recommendation. Going down, so the car shows per vehicle, we are, I'm proposing that we eliminate the $6.50 per car and go to a parking lot per square foot per day for the use for car shows, RV events, boat shows, anybody else that wants to utilize our parking lot for an event, moving that to 1 cent per square foot per day, which comes really close. It's just under what our current asphalt rate monthly would be. So for the car show on their second day when they have all the cars here, they had roughly 140 cars here. They did have some vendors and some other things set up. They were using about 80,000 square feet of our parking lot. So they usually do that in two different days. The RV park, the RV show, again, they used about what half the car show would do. So we kind of just split the parking lot into what those sizes usually are used for. And it comes out to be about $400 per day for one section. For the car show and their double day, it would be about $800 per day for both of them. And if you take that number and you divide it by the 140 cars that were here, the car show would see an increase, you know, in their per car by maybe a couple dollars difference. But it makes it more uniform for what we do and how we lease our grounds for events. On that same page, I also added security camera footage review per hour. Our cameras have been an asset for a lot of different peoples and for us as well. The problem is that it's starting to get really expensive with the high demand of people wanting us to review those cameras. So security camera footage per hour will go to $35 per hour. So as where if somebody had something stolen, broke into, we're more than happy to review that footage, but it will be charged at $35 per hour for us to do that. And then the next page, insurance and certificate limits, no change for any of our insurance, retail, or mortgage. And the last page, our public dock hoist and landing fees. Going from $37 to $39 for offloading equipment or material, staying with six cents per pound on the on unloading any product, and keeping our landing fees at 1 cent per pound for crab and a half a cent per pound for fish, shrimp, and other species. So no change on the per pound for using the hoist, just a $2 increase for the use of the hoist.
I do. Travis, so on this $35 that you charged to, because I know the staff, you know, has to view those cameras that we have recorded. So wouldn't it be more beneficial to work with the Sheriff's Department to give them access over here and let them deal with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. It's something we're going to have to look into. It's going to cost more money for us to do that and incorporate it, but
well, maybe they could help with that.
It is something that we will be. Sorry, go ahead.
That's also not just the sheriff. There, we will get people that come in and just say, "Oh, this happened to me. Can you just check the cameras?"
Well, of course, you can still keep that there, but to cut it down so that you're not always involved doing it for people that are working with the department.
I think there's an option there that could work, yes.
Yeah, I think in the long term that would be in their best interest to have somebody over here and you're sitting and look through those things rather than trying to coordinate to come in the office. Plus, probably not any evidentiary difference whether they do it there or here, but at least they could say, yes, we personally reviewed this. And, I don't know how technologically that can't be too hard, can it?
No, it can't be. It's just, it's all wireless, setting it up, getting it over here, and working out with our security camera guys how they want to train them and where they want to put them. It's probably not a very difficult thing, but in the last 2 months, probably, we've seen a pretty big uptick in the sheriffs wanting to see them, you know, other people having things happen. Can we look at this? And it's just really, when the rates hit, it was kind of like, it's a good opportunity to put something in here because it takes a lot of, well, Danielle's time to review all of them.
Okay. All right. right, that moves to 2024 events.
So, January 19th, 2022, the board approved the Pelican Bay Arts Association to use the boardwalk handrail for the art on the boardwalk for a five-year term. So they still have three years left, but counting the summer. Event scheduled for 2024. Art at the Port, the Curry County Cruisers, Memorial Day observance, Brookings Bodacious Bazaar, Sky High 4th of July, Slammin' Salmon Fish and Derby, Bigfoot Blues Festival, Art on the Coast, Pirates of the Pacific Festival, Jog Your Memory Color Run, and Docktoberfest are what's scheduled for this summer so far.
Okay. I really don't know how to approach this. So the alternative for recreational fishing in the Thames, the Oregon zone from Humboldt Mountain, the Oregon-California border. Alternative one is May 16th through August 31st for Chinook. Alternative two is May 25th through August 18th for Chinook. And alternative three is May 16th through June 21st, open for all salmon except coho, June 29th through August 25th, or the Cape Falcon, the Oregon, California border, 40,000 mark coho quota, open for all salmon except Chinook. Open 7 days a week, two salmon per day, yada, yada, yada. That's a full season in a year in which it's a not full season year. Not a full season amount of fish. The estimated surplus, or the estimated fish available to harvest from both the Sacramento and Klamath in the ocean right now is less than 400,000. So you're going to have a full season with not a whole lot of fish out there. The reason we can do this is because this year the problem was the Sacramento escapement and not Klamath escapement. Normally we're solving for Klamath, which hits us hard because of impact. Now we're solving for Sacramento, which means our impacts are minuscule compared to California. So we can end up having a full season without exceeding our impacts or without having an excessive number of impacts. For coho, we have from Cape Falcon to the Oregon-California border an alternative one. This is the Mark's Flood coho fishery. June 15th through the earlier of August 18th for 50,000 mark coho. Alternative two is June 22nd through the early of August 18th or 45,000 mark coho. And alternative three is June 29th through the earlier of August 25th or 40,000 mark coho. So that's also a full coho fishery for us this year. California, contrast with you, in all four catch areas in California, in recreation, their alternative one is June 6th through 9th. July 3 through 7, August 1 through 4, 29 through 31, and September 1 through October 15th. Their alternative 2 is July 4 through 7th, August 1 through 4, and 29 through 31, and alternative 3 is closed. So they're getting 12 days, 4-5 days of fishing while we're fishing the whole season. But to put that in perspective for you, well, let me do commercial before we move on. So commercial, March 15th to April 30th, all the way across. And I think they modified that because we're not fishing now. So I think they modified that in season, if I remember, to April 15th through the 30th. Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So again, that's based on catch rates and impact rates. But to put this all in perspective, so for the entire Oregon coast, for all three catch areas, our anticipated impacts are 1,027. Contrast that with California for that brief period in July, the 3rd through the 7th, and just the San Francisco cell, their impacts are 1,582. So in that four-day period, they're going to catch almost 400 more fish than we would for the entire season. California's got caught this year on a lot of things, so they're now having to fish on a target for 10,000 recreational salmon, which is why those seasons are split up like they are, because they fish, then they account and see what they have left, and then they'll have to do in-season adjustment on the number of days left. Commercials now are having to do in-season adjustments with trip limits, which they've never done before. And their trip limits, I think they're anticipating 15 salmon a week, which means they're essentially not having a season.
And that's five-day weeks as well.
Right. The issue with the Sacramento is this year the National Marine Fisheries Service guidance for us was to go to the top end of the escapement range, which runs from 180,000 to 122,000. They wanted us to go over 180. They didn't specify what over 180 meant, but that was the guidance. The issue is that we have had two of the last 5 years, we have been below what's known as a minimum stock size threshold, which is your overfishing limit. So if we do that one more year, then Sacramento fish will be declared overfished. And if that happens, then we have to do a rebuilding plan, and that's not good for anybody. So that was a caution, and that's what we were asked to do. So that's where we came out. It's really, optically, this is horrible to have Oregon fishing from and up north of us from March 15th all the way through the end of October, and they've got those few days. So I'm not sure this is not done. Once the alternatives are reviewed, then the council will come up with one. I'm not sure we're going to hang on to all the Chinook days we have. And we also have an issue now with Inn River with sharing with the tribes on the Trinity and Klamath River. Normally the ocean gets 2%. This year the tribes are asking for more than they have had in the past, so we may have to adjust our impacts on Sunk Coho, Southern Oregon, Northern California, Coastal Coho, which includes us, to get within the prescribed catch limit. If we do, then most likely I can solve that by giving up some coho fishing days here in the zone. And that should get us there, I think. So we do have some opportunities to not have this be the done deal yet, but we'll find out in another 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I hate seasons like this. I hate them because normally that season to me as an angler would say, boy, let's go salmon fishing. There's lots of them out there. There aren't. But what we're trying to give you is always we try and give you the maximum number of days on the water we can, account for weather, fish movement, all those kind of things. So my guess is what you're going to see this year are small fish moving through from time to time. Be very beneficial for people to just plan on having scout boats go out on good days and see if they can find fish. If they find them, you ought to go pound them while they're here, because they aren't going to stay very long. In years in which we've had what I would call good fishing here, the ocean abundance has been usually between 700,000 and 1.6 million when we've had really good years. So 350,000 isn't going to give us much. So there's salmon. I'm pretty sure we're going to, as I said, we're going to see a fair amount of effort shift, both recreational and guides coming up here. What this will do for the rest of the fleet, I don't know. Here it is.
Thank you, Richard. At least optimistically, they didn't shut it down like they shut down Cali.
Yeah, well, had we had to solve for Klamath, which we started out doing, before we saw the way the impacts came out, it would have been a dramatically different look.
Just one question. Klamath, fish are going to be running from Cali, California, Sacramento.
Well, I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Well, if you say the climate has an impact on Sacramento River has an impact on climate, it's probably a complex question.
Well, so the issue with climate this year is twofold. First of all, we have been over harvesting the age four component of that. That's the only fishery where their ages are determined in the model. And the reason they use age four Klamath fish, they're a surrogate for the listed California coastal stocks, which include the Mad, Matol, Eel, and Russian River. Because there are no hatchery programs there, they use the marked Klamath fish as a surrogate. So we're normally capped at a 16% harvest rate on those in the ocean. Last year, we were told to go to 10% because we haven't met that escapement for years. This year, we were capped at 6%. So we thought that was what we were going to have to fix. And then in addition this year, because the dams are coming out, we were moved from a total Klamath exploitation rate of 25% down to 20% to allow more fish to go up the river. So that's why I went to that meeting thinking, well, Klamath is going to be our problem. Well, it turns out it wasn't. It would have been had we had more Sacramento fish, but when it turns out there's so few fish available from Sacramento, that just skewed everything that way, which for us, as I said, is pretty good because we have a much lower impact rate on Sacramento than we do on Klamath. So on Klamath fish, the California KMZ has the highest impact rate, and we're second. That. So anyway, that's a lot of detail you probably don't need. But.
Well, Richard, where do they start counting those Sacramento fish? Because there's a lot of tributaries that those were really flooded this
year. Those are Sacramento River fish, and the escapement is based on the total number of natural spawners and hatchery fish that go back. Mm-hmm. So the hatchery is at Anderson, California, right below Redding. It's the Coleman National Fish Hatchery on Battle Creek. So just to put that in perspective for you, there were 6,000 fish showed up there this year.
That's the McCollumay River. I have people that live by that. Well, the
Feather, and the American River all have ample fish, but they don't count against the Sacramento escapement.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
The problem they're having is they've been trucking all those fish down to Fort Ross and dumping them direct in. All the California hatcheries dump them direct, mm-hmm. right into the bay, right out of the Golden Gate. And they also have net pens in Half Moon Bay, Bodega Bay, and Santa Cruz. And those fish are returning at huge numbers. McCallum is off the chart. But they don't want to get out. They don't know where to go. So they come into the bay, and they get up above Benicia, and then they have the bypass canal that runs both ways. And if they're running Sacramento water, they'll go Sacramento. If they're running the other side, they'll go up that side. So they're a mess. California is just a mess. I can't say any more than that.
I can't get an accurate account.
So anyway, that's it.
Thank you.
Swing that right at the sea line.
Okay. So given the sea lions are here, there's been multiple different situations that have arisen that I think warrants a discussion about what our port expectations are from staff, members of the public. What do we want to do with them? What, any ideas of what to do or deterrence that we might want to look at or leaving them alone?
I prefer the paintball.
Right. So when it comes to paintballs, on public property, no public citizen can go out and shoot with paintballs, harass them, move them on. You can't do that as a private citizen on public property. You can't do that. There is very specific rules on when you can and can't do that. And for those of you that don't know them or don't have it, the NOAA Fisheries has the guidelines for it. They are very specific. They also have this that's added to it that when you read it, I highly suggest reading through the entire thing so you understand where the limits come of what a public citizen can do and when and where they can do that. And as a public body or officials or, you know, employees of the port, what we can and can't do. So I will open this floor to anybody that has discussion, because where I'm at, the gates need to stay locked. any boats that are on J-Dock or are in any type of jeopardy of being around the sea lions and you don't want your boat there, you come in and talk to the port and we will relocate your boat. Not a problem. The sea lions, historically, they're here every year and they start coming in early March, you know, late February, early March, first week of April, they're typically always gone. So we are talking about a relatively short window. I know it impacts a lot, but there's a lot of other places that have a lot more problems where they stay longer. They don't ever leave. Another problem with, you know, running these, with regards to the condition of our docks and what we have out there, I and J-Dock are our strongest docks that we have. The fingers are solid concrete fingers. There's no breaks in the dock except for the main dock. So given that they're on there, I know it's a pain in the butt, but if they move to, say, our older docks that are on there, or on the main dock where they're currently at right now, they're gonna do more damage. So I'm open to comments, anything.
Did you look at them this afternoon before the meeting, by chance?
Yep, I had to go down there and move a boat, and they're across the entire main dock.
And they're over there where the Hooker and the Warrior II tie up. They are a nuisance. They are getting more plentiful every day. We need to look at a way to drive them out of our harbor, period.
I am open to suggestions, but I also really urge us when we say to drive them out of our harbor, what that actually means.
You know, the problem I see with the public is they all want to go down to the dock and take pictures of them. And I mean, I've been down there like three times every single day, and I've had to shut the gate over and over. Nobody wants to shut the gate. And a lot of people out there that don't even have boats there know the gate code. And because I'm down there and I'm telling the people that you got to go, you can't be there, and I shut the gate, and there's big signs on the gate that if the gate's open, they don't read it. And somebody on top yells down and gives somebody the code. Just flips to them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, we need to change that.
I got a lot of thoughts.
You too.
Having spent a fair amount of time talking to the National Marine Fisheries Service about this problem, with regard to, so why can't we file a claim with the government for any damage those things create? And it's because the Marine Mammal Protection Act was not written with success in mind. They didn't contemplate having too many of anything when they wrote that. To me, it's public safety. That'd be my first concern. Damage to port property would be my second concern. And my third concern is if we start messing with them where they are, we're going to get them somewhere where we don't want them, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a good answer, but I can tell you the solutions we're going to be able to get by permitting aren't going to be what we're going to want to do. Because from a practical sense, that's going to require someone to be there all day, every day, constantly hazing those things. I mean, I talked to Gary Early, who's been hazing sea lions in at Gold Beach. He says, you cannot let them. You have to be on them all day, every day, nonstop, to have any kind of an effect.
Wow.
And he said, sea lions are particularly difficult because they're a lot smarter than seals. So he says, you can train a sea lion how to avoid you. You can train them to move somewhere else where you don't want them. They're just complicated to deal with. I will tell you from a public safety perspective, you are looking at more lethality from a sea lion bite than you are from a rattlesnake bite. Because they have a massive amount of bacteria in their mouth, several strains of which are antibiotic resistant. I know this from talking to a federal guy that tagged sea lions and got bit by one. Right here, he nearly lost his arm, nearly lost his life. He was in the hospital for well over a month on solid antibiotic drips, and they figured he probably wasn't going to make it. So this is a big deal. It's, you know, we make a lot of fun about it, but we shouldn't. It's a serious thing. And the solutions are going to be complicated. They aren't going to be simple.
No, also in this, I did put in some methods that are out there. You know, we call Newport, and Astoria, they do have seal stops, which are plastic things that spin. They also have this thing called the Stevens roof. Is that what it's called? Smith roof, which is power, which is little electrodes that stick up, and they go across the walking surface that we have for the docks. I particularly, just looking at the picture, immediately thought, who's going to trip on this first?
Are any of them having any substantial success?
Astoria, I guess, has. Westport has. Pier 39 has. Newport said that if they were going to do it again, that they would go to that. But they are for low traffic areas. You know, J-Dock, our main docks, be kind of a far stretch to say they were low traffic. So, like I said, there is methods out there, none of which are cheap. The seal stops are about $250 to go 4 feet. So there is a cost that I'm trying to be cautious of when I'm thinking about this, because in reality, they're here for a month and a half, you know, and I know it's not ideal. I know it's not great for the port finances to be replacing the things that are out there, but it's not an ongoing problem. They do go away, and then everything's back to business as usual. Mm-hmm. Every single year that I know since 2020, I mean, as far back as I can remember, we talk about sea lions when they come here and what to do with them. We had an old dock we put over by the ice house. Maybe 10 years ago, we put our fish carcasses on it. We put every good piece of fish, anything. They just would not go to it. I don't know if it was the bank, where it was at, what it was, but they seemed to be well driven to the Coast Guard dock and J dock.
But they're not hanging on the Coast Guard dock. Why?
Rubber band.
I don't challenge it. I don't take it to those blow up things at all. I think the Coast Guard sends more people down there. They have more constant use from the boats coming and going. They have, you know, 20 guys over there that are going down there and check things. I mean, it's just constant for them to stay off it. Now, that's good for them. They lease that dock. You know, they pay us a lot of money for that entire dock. So I'm glad that it's not impacting them, but it is, however, impacting us. But so far, our remedies have been to relocate the vessels until they move on.
Travis?
One question. The electrical panels are getting really tore up where the water comes out. Mm-hmm. That piping, they jump on that and they break the bottom of the stanchions.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is worth about $1,000 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do nothing about that.
I mean, I could pull the entire electrical system out of J-Dock. You know, I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not ideal. I don't have a good answer. They do damage.
The situation all the way around. I was down here today, and I-Dock was blocked by them, too.
Yeah.
So you go down there, you run them out of there, and 10 minutes later, they're back again.
Yep.
And they're, 300-400 pounds a piece. And it's
going
to tear that stuff up, man.
Yep.
You're having to pull all the boats off of I-Dock, right? Or J-Dock, rather. Have you tried or talked to anybody that's tried the electric fencer, you know, like you use on cattle? Because you use that on a pig. A pig gets it one time, man. He don't even get close to that thing. So you're looking at a unit that costs maybe $100, $150, a roll of wire and a bunch of insulators.
So
and you got the electrical down there already.
So it's going to come down to public safety. I mean,
well,
when you have a cattle wire
well,
out
you
there,
just,
you can't
you block
be
that off so the public can't get to it. You already have a wood barrier on that one side. They can put a wood barrier up there so the people can't get around to that part of the dock, but at least it'll keep them off that dock.
So I would
keep the stuff breaking
And I completely get that. There is things you can do to get them off the dock. The problem that always persists are, where are they going to go?
They're not going to leave until the herring and the food move on.
That is just, I mean, this has happened for years and years and years. This time of year right now is about the peak of them. You know, even talking to ODF and W and the records they have, by April, the first week of April, we'll see these things starting to be gone.
Well, they're here because the herring are gone.
Yep.
That's what's bringing them here. And so but the thing that disturbs me is this appears to me to be learned behavior, because we have continually increased the numbers that have shown up, this year being by far the worst I've ever seen.
I looked at a picture from 2022, and they were across the whole dock. As a matter of fact, on J Dock, where the barrier is there, that was put up there to try and stop them from creeping up the dock, which they were there. And the entire Coast Guard dock was completely full from one end to the other. So I would still not say we have an abundance more. I mean, if you were to look at them, you might have 30, 40 more, 50 more maybe out there. But the numbers peak right now, and in previous pictures that I've looked at my phone, I mean, it's unbelievable how much area they cover. But I
can we agree that nobody here likes them? Nobody here would choose to have them here if we didn't. But it's historically, they're going to be here. If you move them from one dock, they're going to go to another dock. The only way to stop it is to keep them off every single dock. That's not feasible. We can't stop the herring from coming here. That's not feasible.
I contend that it's not historical. I have lived in this community for over 50 years, Larry, and I guarantee you that this is only in the last 15 years max that this problem has occurred.
Okay.
We need to address it, and it's going to be worse.
Okay. Well, then as a commission, we need to come together and discuss what we want to do. The commission needs to make this choice, maybe with staff.
Well, I think staff is doing a really good job accommodating our fishermen that have boats down there and finding them new locations to be temporarily, and just trying to keep the public safe.
Right.
I do want to interject. We have one. Everybody's had a question.
I get they'll go from one dock to another, but is there a way that we can put like the railing that's on the docks at the boat ramp, how it's up 5 or 6 inches. If you put a railing along the dock with a roller on it, a piece of sleeving, pipe, whatever, so when they jump up, they roll back off.
I mean, I get they're going to go somewhere else. Right, and I get that. It does come down to, I mean, I guess a lot of it comes down to cost and the effectiveness of it. I just don't want to be out spending money.
All I'm saying is try it on one dock, try it at the end, and maybe on the first two slips in, try it there. If they don't go there and they fall off, you know it's working.
They did in towboats.
Well, part of the reason for having this on here is to discuss a policy. We're not at policy even close yet. We've got a lot of work to do. So I think in the interim time, we're not going to get a policy done while this is going on. So by next year, we can probably be prepared. And all we can do is look at potential solutions and see what's working somewhere else and do the best we can, and then make the trade-off decision about the cost versus effectiveness.
Travis, can I ask what brought this to your attention and why it's here in front of us?
I'll tell you, because I did. I walked down the dock a week and a half ago shooting with a paintball gun, our paintballs out of a rift rocket.
Okay. And you said a private citizen can't go on our public docks and do that.
It's from what I read and understand, yes.
Okay.
Well, they're not a private citizen if they're paying to be there.
So you are a private citizen when you walk into this port. If you are not an employee of this port, you are a private citizen here at the port. Same thing with the commission. The commission are private citizens that can utilize the port. The only way this board can go out and act as in a government in a official capacity is if the board boats to allow for that activity to happen.
So we had a port commissioner on a public dock shooting sea lions?
Yes, that happened, you know, and it's... Yes, it did happen. And I think, you know, when you read this, there is a, without fully reading it, it does give the ability for that to happen. After I read it more thoroughly, I found where, you know, there's limitations to what to when and where that can be done. So, yes, we did get complaints. I've gotten complaints from boat owners, from private citizens, you know, about various multiple different things that have been happening down there. So that's what triggered this, was that we need to discuss this as a group and decide how we would like our port image to be when dealing with these sea lions, and how, what the expectation is for when they come in here. Are we going to move the boats and try and just leave them be for the month and a half that they're here? You know, go down, maintain what you can and do the best you can. Are we going to put up electrical fences? Are we going to put up rollers? Are we going to put up seal stops? Do I need to hire somebody to come down here for a month and a half and run back and forth on the docks? You know, it just leads to, there's a lot of different options, and it just depends on how far that we're willing to, how much we're willing to put into this to deter these things during the duration that they're here.
Well, as a suggestion, we may want to reach out to National Marine Fisheries Service and have them bring somebody down here and sit down and talk to us about what the rules are and what is possible.
Yeah, well, our options might be from them.
See.
Yeah. So, NOAA Fisheries specifically they wrote it themselves in here that there is no known deterrent method to universally stop these
animals. It seems like that the seals are all in spaces where there are no boats.
Absolutely. It's the easiest place for them to go.
Right.
As I start filling up and putting boats in there, they are extremely drawn to the Coast Guard dock and J dock for whatever reason that might be. We have put our own workboat over there. We have tried to fill in with other things for them to be over there. There was three of them in our workboat. This morning there was another, I just moved another boat that was on that dock because they were in his boat.
Oh,
I know last year they were up on that, the Oriana sailboat, yep, and they ripped down a whole bunch of rails and things like that. So I do think that if we, you know, by filling it up with boats may in turn end up costing our customers, you know, pretty dearly as far as damage.
Yeah, my boat sits
in. Yeah, and you're the carver that glued to the inside?
No, mine's the twin engine.
The other one that's sitting down there. So, yeah, like my best suggestion for you is come in and talk to us and let's get your boat. So nothing else happens to it, especially while we work these things out. And then as soon as they move on, we'll obviously get you back to your slip.
Well, they've taken over more of that dock than they had last year. Because they're down there where Sharon might have our slip. They've moved all the way down now.
They're down there because they aren't able to get up on the Coast Guard dock.
They just brought friends.
And why is that? It's because they don't. Coast Guard does not make them feel at home. They make them very uncomfortable.
That's what
we need to do with seals. Right now you're rolling out the red carpet.
I would very much, so I just put this there. I want this to be known because it's very frustrating when somebody says, when it appears that, or it sounds as if they're doing something and we're not.
Correct.
The problem lies with this. There is nowhere for them to go. We cannot line up seven boats wide and put down a blade and push them out of this port. That's not going to happen. They are going to be here because their food is here. Until their food moves on, they're going to be here. So I wouldn't say that it's because they're out there doing something. It's because we have elected to keep them where they are and not spread the problem throughout the port. Just so it's understood what my perspective on it is. And what I'm telling my guys, I do not want to see people down there running those sea lions off those docks every single day, two or three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
It gets worse every time they jump off and they jump back on. It gets worse. They get off, they get back on, they get back on. If we're down there, I mean, you can go down there. I'm sure Dan saw it. I saw it. No matter what we've done as far as walking down there to shooting paintballs at them, when you walk up the ramp, did any of them leave?
No.
Has one of them left? Not one has left due to any deterrence that we've had. And if we do something and we find that, okay, it's working on J-Dog, the reality is that they're not going to leave. So if I spend $10,000 on J-Dog to stop the problem there, and they move to another dock, do I spend another $10,000 on that dock? Because we have a lot of docks, and that's a lot of $10,000. So I just wanted to be known that we're not just doing nothing. Is what I'm doing is trying to consolidate the problem to one area.
But the problem, Travis, as I see it, is just like I expressed at the beginning of this. They're moving to other docks. The population is not getting smaller. We have got to, because eventually you've got no space to move a boat to, and they're going to be amongst the boats. So we've got to do something proactive now to keep that spread from overtaking the rest of the docks. There was a month ago, there were two harbor seals, and they're not the big problem. They're not the big stellars and the other ones, but they were clear down there almost to the dredge laying on a dock.
Thank you.
So, and that was before the big mass showed up. My concern has and will be that if we continue, and I'm not claiming that you're rolling out the red carpet, anybody's rolled out the red carpet by any means, but we have to do something proactive now. Otherwise, they're going to be, you have no place to move a boat, and everybody's got to deal with them when they try to get to their boat. That's my point now. That's why I say we need to find a way to drive them out of the harbor. Believe me, my best solution, National Marine Fisheries Service and the MMPA will not approve of it. And it's more than a hazel. That's a lethal means. That's my solution to it. But that being said, we can't do that. And knowing that we have to act within the law, we've got to find something now that we can do to keep this from becoming a big scourge. That's why I suggested to you about putting the docks over there across where we used to have the crab dock, putting some of our old docks up over there. If they didn't work, well, then we got to find something different, but put them up over there, and maybe we can get the worthless fur bags to hang out over there instead of destroying our good docks and destroying pedestals and other such
and
items.
I completely agree, but like I said, they seem to like that dock. We've had that public, you know, the public fishing dock that we had out there that's been out there for years, and they have never one time.
I don't know why.
They've never one time came into, you know, farther into here. We have our daily moorage docks that are, I mean, we have to pressure wash the moss off them because there's nobody walking down there. They don't come in there. Why? I don't know. But I will actively take any opinions on what they can do, but I just don't want, I don't want people getting all irritated because I go back to, this is, we compared to other places, we don't have a problem. We have a very, very, very small problem. But the places that are bigger are actively, they are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to get these docks, these sea lions off their docks to no avail. There is no known method for deterring these animals. So I'm open to trying things, but, I mean, as we'll see in our upcoming budget, we don't have a whole bunch of money or time to be wasting on, I wouldn't say wasting our time on them, but spending a significant amount of our time or money on deterring them for the duration that they're here. It's not a long enough duration. If they were here for 4 months, 6 months, you know, anything longer, but this is a relatively small time. But, I mean, I'm open to trying things that may or may not work. I just don't want anybody getting irritated if I say that's not going to work for the port, because it's a very difficult, complex problem to where all of the needs are being met and the capabilities are being done.
Well, let's just close this now. And with the understanding that we'll be developing a policy, or at least looking at policy language and trying to determine what we're going to do before next year.
Okay.
And get that done. So Let's then move to board practices assessment update.
Okay, this, the board practice assessment, this is offered by SDAO. This also gives us a 2% discount on our insurance. Let me find this page, sorry. It's a 2% credit towards our 2024 liability contribution. It takes about 90 minutes. It's an on-site facilitated meeting with full board and management staff personnel would normally participate in the board meeting. It is a self-assessment process in which participants will evaluate the board's effectiveness in 6 key performance areas to identify strengths, weaknesses in the board's governance practices. Results of the board practice assessment underscore the significant link between a board's performance and their district's risk management experience. Simply put, the good board practices lead to sound risk management. Within a week following the meeting, the board will receive a written summary of their self-assessment and a document called Consultants' Impressions and Recommendations. The board would like to proceed with this assessment. We just need to pick 2 dates, and the consultant will pick a day that works for them. So this is something that we're going to do.
Well, you guys have done this before, too.
This has been done
in the past.
A few years ago.
I would recommend you pick 2 dates before the 1st of May and after the first week in April.
1st of May and after the first week in April. Okay.
So would our regular meeting be? Is
it just one
option and then a special meeting?
Does that work for everybody?
We'd have a special meeting first and then a regular meeting or something like that.
We could probably do a special meeting first to try and do it all on the same meeting day, but try and do it early. When is that meeting?
April 17th.
Will
you still be
gone, Larry? No, I'll be back around 6th.
Dan, does that seem to work out?
I don't have nothing scheduled at that day. I'm looking at my calendar right now, so.
So after the session and before,
I will put that in. Hopefully we can get it on the same meeting day as our April meeting. Let me see if we can put that together that quick. That's all I got.
That brings us to, gentlemen, excuse me. Now we come to Commissioner's comment.
Travis, I think you and staff are doing a great job. It was really nice to watch you guys down there working on that bridge and, you know, just seeing how it was going to function and seeing it in the water. And I want to congratulate you guys on your award that you're going to be receiving.
Thank you.
So a question for the board. We in the past have sponsored a prize for the art. Are we interested in doing that?
I'm either way.
So this is, we put up $40 a piece, and then we get to pick a winner in the art out here.
Did they take it on returns like commercial fishing?
No.
Who's out of Fort Budget?
So I'm just interested if you're really interested in doing that.
I'm good. $40?
Okay. All
right. So let me step right up.
It's like a Port
Commission award
that we award now.
So one other thing, House Bill 4080 passed the legislature. This is the one that's dealing with offshore wind. And the Port of Brookings Harbor specifically called out in that bill for assessment. So that we're now, people are legislatively directed to come talk to us about things. So I just mentioned that.
I'll say it's a port.
Port of Coos Bay, Port of Brookings were specifically called out.
Port in Newport.
Yeah. a new port yet. And so this is a, this was actually a labor bill.
Yeah, it was regarding the labor.
To deal with unionized labor on all these wood platform projects, but we were included in that.
It passed. It was, isn't there still kind of questions if the federal government's actually going to have to follow that?
No, there is no question about that, because as they go through, they have to do what's called a federal consistency review. So the feds have to review enforceable state policies and deal with enforceable state policies. This is an enforceable state policy. It is a not really, it is a statute, I guess. It also directs the Department of Land Conservation and Development to be the lead agency to write a roadmap for the development of offshore wind energy. This group I've been telling you I've been working with, that's what we're handing them as a template for a roadmap to do that. That includes the Port of Sentinel as well. So when I was in Fresno, the three lease companies that have leased already down there, their three fisheries consultants came to the meeting and came in and talked to us about what their activities are. So that's a requirement of that, of the lease that they get from BOEM. And so what they are talking to fishermen about is, so we're going to be out conducting whatever research we have to do, and our boat will be in the area at this time of day. Is that going to inconvenience you from your activities? And if it is, we'll try and figure out a way around that. So there's quite a bit that goes on, and they'll come talk to recreational fleet about where we fish and all that sort of thing. So it's after the lease is done, but it is required for them to do that. So, okay. Anything else? All right. With that, our next regular meeting date will be Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, at 2 p.m. in this room. And we are adjourned.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.